This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Charmed, and welcome back to Let Me Ruin Your Life with me, Serena Shahidi. Hello, how is everybody doing? I hope you're well. Happy February. It's officially February. Love is in the air. I mean, it's been in the air with the amount of goddamn couples I've been seeing, but now it's officially in the air. So I hope this month you'll all be celebrating all the love you have in your life, whether it is romantic, whether it's platonic love, self-love. Maybe you love something, like you really love table tennis or something like that, and you can celebrate that. Perhaps by, this is a good one, if that's your situation, perhaps you could celebrate by playing table tennis. And what else is Valentine's Day in February for? I have a tradition with a friend. I don't know if we're doing it this year, but my usual tradition is we get really, really silly, shall we say, and then we go to a museum. And that's it. And I'd imagine it's going to go on for a long time because who else are we going to hang out with on Valentine's Day? Some guy who made dinner reservations? Please. So that's my tradition, and that's my way of celebrating love. Celebrating, I guess, platonic love. And just my love for mischief and nonsense. The heart swells. It's very cold in my apartment right now, and I'm wearing a cream cable knit sweater, like the one from Knives Out. And I want to talk about something, speaking of that, that caught my attention this week. I want to talk about, for the first time in my life, I want to voluntarily discuss the celebrity by the name of Chris Evans. Okay? I know this is a first for me, and it's a first for the world. That man, first of all, he's so famous. I don't know. I know him from Knives Out, And I know him from not another teen movie. So I don't know if that's how the rest of the world feels. I'd imagine there's probably something else out there. But I came across a video of him. The stars aligned and fate happened. And I watched this video of him. It was an interview when Chris Evans won People's Sexiest Man Alive. Which, by the way, wouldn't you love to see like a docuseries about how they pick that? I would love to know the politics of it all. I would love to know why they chose that country singer that one year. I don't know what was up with that. But okay, they did this interview for Sexiest Man Alive where he is like wearing a sweater and, I don't know, playing with puppies or brewing iced tea or something like that. Just looking very wholesome and answering these questions about nothing. Where all he's saying is like, I'm looking to start a family. I'm a loyal guy. And I'm sensitive. And I believe in true love. Just all this absolute hogwash. And it was just a little clip that I saw. But I watched it over and over because I was just enthralled by this. This nonsense that the celebrity was spewing. Let me see, actually, if I can find it. Let me search this on YouTube because I want to just play a little bit of the audio so you know what I'm talking about. Chris Evans, sexiest man alive. Okay. 10 minutes. What the hell? Okay, there's a clip, there's a YouTube short to the rescue. And it's titled, Chris Evans Wants to Settle Down. Perfect. Okay.
Wife, kids, building a family. That's absolutely something I want, you know? When you read most of the best artists, whether it's actors, painters, writers, you know, most of them later in life talk about it wasn't about the work they made, it was about the relationships, the families they created, the love they found, the love they shared. That's also something that...
There's, by the way, shots of him, like, in a tank and a denim jacket, just kind of nodding and smiling at things.
Through my experience, through my long 41 years, has also rang true that those things are the most important. So, yeah, I love the idea of tradition and ceremony. I had a lot of that in my life, so the idea...
Rubbing the back of his neck in the denim jacket, too good. Too good. They're so good at this.
I can't think of anything better.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, I think declarations of love are great. I love love. You know what I mean?
He loves love.
Like that. I like...
Oh, he's a bit of a sap.
Being sentimental. I cry pretty easily. Oh,
he's so sensitive. Chris Evans, you are so sensitive. I mean, did you hear that bullshit? That is fascinating. Is that what the female gaze is? Just some guy in a sweater being like, I love, what can I say? I love love. I know it's radical, but I love love. Fully in the mode of one of those tapes that they used to do back in the day, those dating services where you would make a video and send it off, and then you would get some tape of a bunch of guys being like, I love long walks on the beach and staring into a woman's eyes, and I'm just looking for someone to build a life with. And then you would like write to them. That is what's coming across there. It's just a video for a dating service. If I were him, I mean, it's easy to say this. It's easy to say that you would turn something down. But part of me thinks perhaps if I were him, I would be like, I'm not doing that shit. I'm not on a steroid cycle so I can get on camera and make up a bunch of bullshit about how good of a boyfriend I would be. Or a husband, I guess. He's 40. And I also don't know if he's juicing, as they call it. I just like to make stuff up. Maybe it's true. I don't know. I'd have to see his body. I think I might love the job of being a publicist for a hot guy. That might be my path. I think it sounds like so much fun. You make sure he's single. You make sure simultaneously that he's always talking about how he's ready to settle down. This is the more evolved version of when you would see those Tiger Beats in the grocery store, and it would be like, Niall Horan, quote, I love a girl with a good personality. It's so funny. I feel like I was listening to a podcast recently with some former heartthrob who got married and the news got out. God forbid that he got married, and it basically ruined his career because it was based on just convincing young girls that he was going to date them one day. And the funny part about that is you can say whatever you'd like. You can talk all goddamn day about how loyal you are and how ready you are to commit and how you want, I don't know, a dining room with an assortment of tablecloths and a fabulous centerpiece. You can do that all you'd like. And even if it's true, here's the thing, even if it's true, you're still an actor or you're still a musician, whatever it is, nobody should be dating you. Whether or not you want a German Shepherd or you like to cuddle, nobody should be dating you. You're a goddamn actor. Let's discuss that. You want to talk about you being a husband? I'd like to discuss you being an actor. They don't talk about that. They don't ever... The establishment does not want you to know that actors are actors at the end of the day. And that's what I'm here for, to tell you that. And that's that. All right. Let's get to the advice questions here on this day. Of course, if you want to ask me a question, can be as silly or as serious as you would like. You can DM me at Let Me Ruin Your Life Pod, and maybe I'll answer it. and fix your whole life as a 23-year-old fashion school dropout. First question today, somebody wants to know how to deal with negative feedback at work or school. Ooh. Ooh. I hate, unpopular opinion, I hate negative feedback. I prefer positive feedback. And I really like when people are nice to me and they think I did a good job. But here's what you have to keep in mind, because here's the problem. Everybody else is getting negative feedback too. They just don't talk about it. They just don't tell you, because we're so obsessed with a job well done. We're so obsessed with productivity and getting stuff done. Also, everyone's lazy and not doing anything, or at least the people I know. Half the people I align with are just, I don't know, day drinking and racking up credit card debt. Nobody's doing anything, and they're certainly not doing a good job. I have had friends who fully have, like, gotten screamed at their boss, almost fired, brought into an office where someone's like, you gotta step your game up, how dare you? And I don't learn about that until months later, because nobody wants to tell you, and most of these people are not gonna tell you, ever. But they're getting negative feedback too. You are not the only person in the world who's getting bad grades and bad performance reviews. And so what? So what? You know what you gotta have in your little pocket is a growth mindset. You gotta have a growth mindset, which is, I learned about this in AP English in, I believe, junior year. I had a really fabulous teacher. She was so nice and so personable, so empathetic. But she made us read this book about growth mindset. By the way, as is the case with most, I guess, self-help books, not very well written. Sorry to call the growth mindset people out, but it was an introduction where you learn what the mindset is, and then every chapter was just an example of, this is what that looks like at work. And it's like, thanks, I can actually be clued in to what that looks like in various settings. But, so growth mindset is basically when you fail at something or you just don't do as good of a job as you would like to do, and then you aren't like, I should kill myself. You don't say that to yourself. And that's what's really special about it. And that is the way to get better at stuff. To not do a great job, to get some feedback perhaps that you didn't do a great job, figure out what the gap is between where you are, where you want to be, and be like, okay, you know what? This is a privilege. This is a fresh start now. The next time I do whatever it is I'm doing, taking a test, I don't know. This is me going in now with a new knowledge and wisdom, and I don't have to wish death upon myself every time my GPA goes down. And you don't want to start at the top anyway. You want to be a little bit of a failure at times, because starting on top of your game, it's like growing up really attractive or really rich. And it's nice, you know, there's a middle ground there. You don't want to be relentlessly bullied. You don't want to grow up in poverty, ideally. But do you really want to grow up with a perfectly symmetrical face and a trust fund? No, we know those people. We know those people. They're terrible. There's nothing to fall back on. And they start to realize that in their adulthood. And they get very insecure and very mean also. And you can tell when someone like that starts to realize, like, oh, there's kind of nothing beneath this and nothing for me to really fall back on, and I don't know what to do with myself. You know when they reach that point. And they just get so defensive and mean. So you don't want to start off being perfect just so you can learn absolutely nothing. And you know what? Really, the only way to get less negative feedback, besides just working harder, whatever, is asking more questions. You get more clarification. Sometimes it's like, listen, this teacher, my boss, my professor, whoever, they're going to be rolling their eyes at me anyway because I don't know a lot of this stuff. I don't know exactly how the world works. I might as well get that eye roll over with. and ask them a bunch of stupid questions and really get in front of that. Ask some stupid questions. When people are like, oh, there is no such thing as a stupid question, I'm always like, honey, you just met me. Welcome to stupid questions. And I'm not ashamed of that one bit. I need clarification. I'm going to be asking some stupid questions. I'm going to be introducing you to this world. I will ask if it's standard to print something on printer paper, or can I just write it with a crayon on construction paper? What do I know? What do I read minds? Jesus. So that's that. You're not alone. Growth mindset. And annoy people with a bunch of questions. And don't be ashamed of that. Someone else would like to know if it was hard for me to move away from my family and be completely on my own in a big city. We're getting personal. It was pretty easy for me. I'm not gonna lie. It was pretty easy for me. I mean, I moved to New York when I was 18. From the suburbs, I was very restless. Very, very restless. And I just wanted excitement. At the time, I didn't really value things like family probably as much as I should have, which is also just being a teenager. Like, being a teenager in the suburbs in particular is very just convincing yourself that the world is against you, except for whatever coastal city you're dying to move to. They're gonna love you. They'll love you there, but everyone else, they're against you. But I will say, if anyone's listening to this and maybe you have teenagers or your kid is moving away for college and not texting you back, they'll come crawling back. I certainly have. I mean, I'm still not great at texting back, but I have crawled back. Mitski's class of 2013 on repeat and such. So I was kind of careless about that. And I mean, I didn't have a ton that I was leaving behind. Like, I didn't have a bunch of friends in North Carolina. I had some, but I didn't feel like my whole life was there. I felt like my life was out in the world waiting for me to explore. And you know what? It was. So I moved here. I only knew one person here, actually, a friend from high school who went to Cooper Union. And I didn't make a ton of friends for a while. I mean, when I first moved, I very much relied on dating to explore the city and such, to be young and have fun. And because where I'm from, nobody was really, like, attracted to me. So to be in New York and be finally attractive, not just in terms of having a glow up, as they say, but being the New York type, I was like, Oh, it's on. Like, I'm so ready for this. And I just wanted to have as many different experiences as possible, especially with dating. I mean, I wanted to date, like, who knows, lawyers and engineers and circus clowns and maybe inventors. I don't know. I did kind of date. No, I didn't go on a date with him. Oh my God, here's what happened. I think matched with a man on Hinge or something who invented some sort of product, had his own little startup, and I Googled his name and a bunch of articles popped up about how this startup was a scam. And I messaged him and I was like, what's the deal with your scam allegations? And he was so very, oh, that. You want to hear about that? I mean, yes. Like, I wasn't even, never speak to me again. I was just like, I'd love to hear an explanation. You know me, I'm very sympathetic to scammers. Especially a startup like that. He was probably only scamming people who could afford to be scammed. So, it wasn't necessarily a deal breaker. Everyone makes mistakes. We all get accused of fraud every now and then. And sometimes you just need to provide some context for that. So, yeah, I was dating around. I just had to get it out of my system because I didn't really rebel in my youth, which is so strange to think about because I have so many wild experiences under my belt now. But in high school, I didn't so much as sneak out of my window. And I had a window that was very sneak-outable. I could just open it and I could get on the... Is it called a subroof? No, I think I made that up. Whatever it is in a two-story house where there's sort of a roof you can get to through an upstairs window, that's the situation that I had, and it was low enough that I could just jump right on down, and I never did. I had nowhere to go. I was staying inside, and I was reading my Rookie Mag and my Exo Jane, and I was doing collages and making altars. I was very into making altars, but it was more of, I didn't make them for a specific thing. I just kind of made them as a little mood board. So that's what I was doing, as opposed to being a rebellious little youngster. So naturally, when I moved to New York, honey, please. So my advice, if anyone's doing the same thing, try to experience as many things as possible. I mean, get a weapon. Because if you're anything like me when I was 18, 19, you're gonna put yourself into some foolish situations, probably. I don't know how I wasn't murdered at certain points in my life, but do lots of things. Cast a wide net to figure out who your people are, what your places are, where you're gonna be a little bit of a regular. Because cities have all types of people. You wanna meet all sorts of them. I still now try to say yes to just about everything. Not everything, like if I know for a fact that I'm not going to have a good time, but everything I haven't quite tried yet. A bar that's in a dungeon, I'm there. Murray Hill Club, gotta go for the story. Someone's brother's bar mitzvah, what can I bring? Do you need a DJ? I can't even DJ, but if you need a backup DJ... I am available. So best of luck if that's your situation. If you're just a small town girl moving to the big city where you don't know a soul, I'm sure you'll have lots of fun and you'll pave your own way in this crazy, crazy world. What have I been up to? I went to a screening the other night, a movie screening for M. Night Shyamalan's Knock at the Cabin. It was, a pretty casual little thing. They did have a little bit of a red carpet, by the way, at the just AMC movie theater. And despite the fact that I was told to dress casually, and then I arrived and I was like, well, I'm not getting my picture taken. I'm in a sweater dress. It's not bad. I probably overdressed for what I was told, but I don't need to immortalize this moment. Me in a sweater dress carrying popcorn. I don't need to carry that with me for the rest of my life. So there was a little bit of that. Then there was the actual screening. The movie is about... Okay, here's the plot. It is a family. Two dads. That's the M. Night Shyamalan twist. That there are two fathers. And their daughter. They're living in a cabin together as a family does. And then, as implied, there is a knock at the cabin one day, and this group of people come in, and they're basically like, one of you has to die or the world will end. And you have to pick amongst yourselves. We can't pick for you. You have to kill amongst yourselves. We can't kill them for you. And that person cannot kill themselves. And so they have to figure out what's what and who's who and who's gonna die. Very intense thriller. Will certainly raise your blood pressure in many ways. Because also, the two dads, very hot. Very hot actors. I will say, though, it was quite suspenseful. I do wish there was a little bit more exploration there. More of, perhaps, an explanation of what exactly is going on and why. And what it says about the world, because it is one of those movies that feels like commentary on something. I mean, any apocalypse movie now is commentary on something. not all of it is as heavy-handed as a Don't Look Up, I'd imagine. I didn't see that movie. I can make assumptions, and I'm sure I'd hate it. But sometimes you're like, this is definitely trying to say something. I'm not sure exactly what. And I'll sit here and I'll enjoy it. But I'm not totally sure if I'm supposed to be learning a lesson here on this day. So after the screening, there's a Q&A with M. Night Shyamalan. And when I was sent the invite, it said that the Q&A was supposed to be with J. Cole as well. And I figured, oh, J. Cole must be associated with this movie somehow. No. No. I don't know if that's a regular thing, but at most of the movie screenings I've ever been to in my day, the people on stage doing the Q&A are all generally involved with the movie. Anyway, we get to the screening, and they make a little announcement. Okay, J. Cole can't come. M. Night Shyamalan will instead be joined by Pete Davidson. And you'd expect, with a celebrity of that caliber right now, you would expect the crowd to be like, oh my God. But you just heard a bunch of, just confused muttering from the audience. And then they were like, oh, don't worry though, J. Cole has a message. And it's just maybe a 12-second video where the ratio is so off and he's just stretched across the screen. It was very Nicole Kidman, AMC vibes. He's like, movies can really move you. And this is a great movie. And that was that. And then the Q&A happens. Pete Davidson comes out. Nobody understands what's happening. Everyone's filming nonetheless. He is very charming, though. The people are right. He's very charming. I think it's that he's sort of shameless about his background and being, in his words, you know, Staten Island trash. Which can go either way with celebrities. Sometimes it's like, oh, you're trying to be relatable. Here comes Ellen with her humor about traffic. Girl, buy a flying car or something. Leave us alone. And sometimes, if that person is charming and funny to begin with, it's like, I like this. I like this. You're pulling this off. I mean, my working theory is that the only difference between the people who are called tone deaf and the people who aren't is just whether or not we like them in the first place. If someone likable is doing an Architectural Digest tour of their mansion during an economic crisis, do we really care? I think for the most part, no. But, and I don't know why on earth I remember that this happened, but when Chrissy Teigen tweets that she bought a bunch of AirPods because she keeps losing them, then that's the moment where we're like, this is tone deaf. How dare you? People can't afford AirPods. And you're out here buying them all up? She's gonna have the same amount of wealth, whether or not she's buying a dozen pairs of AirPods a year. Who cares? But we just want her out. But the people just want rid of her. So I went to that screening. Afterwards, with a few friends, we went to a wine bar, which was very fun. The bartender was so fun. We stayed, like, until it closed, drinking some Riesling and some Chardonnay. At the end of the night, he just poured out the rest of the bottle for us, which I was very grateful for, by the way, because the way I had to get home, I had to walk not that far, like half a mile, but in 30-degree weather with just gusts of wind. No tights at all, let alone fleece-lined tights that I normally wear in that weather. So I was grateful for the extra alcohol keeping me warm. And the bartender also at one point, when we were one of the only groups in there, we were, of course, talking about Justin Timberlake because my friend was like, some of the people who are famous now, they're just going to end up being a Justin Timberlake type where we look back and we're like, what was that person offering and why did we ever like them? And then the bartender is like, oh, this is a middle-aged man, by the way, and what he did to Janet Jackson, acting like it was her fault and distancing himself from her. And we were like, yes, yes, thank you. That's my king. The bartender, not Justin Timberlake. Ugh. But why did I bring this up? Oh, because at the wine bar, we were also watching a video that I had come across naturally a few days before. that I'm obsessed with. It's a TikTok by a girl who is about 12 years old. She goes by Your Fave Caroline on TikTok. And she did this like 3-part series about her first kiss. It was a story time, if you will. She was telling us a bit of a story, and it was also a get ready with me naturally. Who can pay attention to somebody just talking? I need to be getting ready with you and participating in that experience. I can't just hear a story. I gotta watch the application of some cream blush. Just listening to a plain old story. What am I, an 80 milligrams of Adderall? So she does this little story time. By the way, I always think this is so funny when kids like whisper. They're making a video, but they're like, "Hi guys, I just wanted to say," and you're like, "Okay, their mother is asleep in the next room. Work." But let me recap this story, okay? At least give you the synopsis, because I'm pretty sure it's like 10 minutes in its entirety. She starts off by saying this little boy was under 5 foot, and she goes, "There's nothing wrong with short kings, but ... Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough, Caroline. We get it." And she's like, "We were talking to each other. We were dabbing each other up in the hallway." That's romance. That's what love is nowadays. Men don't put their jacket over a puddle anymore. They dab you up in the hallway. Even if they're a grown man, they'll dab you up in the lobby of your building, and that's courtship. So eventually, this boy asked her out, or rather, at recess, he was like, "We're going to the movies." I guess it was supposed to be a double date, right? With his friend and her friend, but his friend got rejected by her friend, and it was no longer a double date. And Caroline's like, "Well, I can't tell my father that I'm just going to the movies with two boys. What will he think?" And she's right, that's something you gotta save for adulthood. So, I don't think they went to the movies. I really should have taken more notes, my apologies. They did go to the mall, okay? That we're sure of. They did go to the mall, and they kissed. And afterwards, Caroline was like, "You know what? I'm not really feeling this," as is her right. As is her right as a girl, and as an American, and a sixth grader, or however old she is. And she tells the boy, "Let's just be friends." And that was that. And she said, the moral of the story is, don't settle and don't be desperate. I know a few 30-year-olds who could stand to learn that. And if you don't want to kiss someone, don't kiss them. Yeah. Yeah. So naturally, I was enthralled by this tale. And just, it makes you think, when you see someone that young sharing their life on the internet, it just makes you think, is my point. It just makes you think. Because everyone is doing that now, like including young people who are trying to do what adults are doing, but are going to have the story of their first kiss as told by their 12-year-old self on the internet. And I'm not endorsing that. I mean, I regret like most of the things I've posted on the internet. And how old was I? 20? But it is just so interesting to see, to witness things and hear about things that you wouldn't otherwise see. At least not anymore. When's the last time I heard a middle schooler tell me about their first kiss? When I was in middle school. There's obviously a lot that's concerning about people in general, but especially young people, having so much information about their lives on the internet. But selfishly, it's also fun to see. Even if it's not someone who's much younger than me or whatever, one of my favorite types of content is just like a little slice of life moment. Just those videos where someone, and couples love doing this too, when they're like, "We found these chips at the store. We're gonna try them. We've never tried this flavor before." And then they open the bag and they take a chip and they're like, "I'm scared." And you're like, "Bitch, of what? But okay." And then they try the chip and they're like, I like it. And the other one's like,
I don't know if I like it. And then they post that on the internet for all to see, and I eat it right up, like they did with those chips. I enjoy myself so much. That type of stuff in particular, it's just, it's one of those things. I've said this is the type of stuff I'm most fascinated by, is when someone or something is so boring. And I'm not saying your fave Caroline is boring. I'm talking about the slice of life. When someone or something is so boring that it loops back around to being fascinating. That moment when you're just like, why would those people make something like that and share it as if it's interesting? And the funny part is, now it's interesting. Now I want to know everything about you and how you got to this point. How did you get to this moment in your life where you're making a video called Come Grocery Shop With Me? And I'm just watching you pick items off of shelves. I love it.
So
I guess selfishly want to see more of that type of content of just learning about people's lives, even if it's content that they'll find regrettable in the future. I mean, that, your fave is Caroline first kiss story, that so reminded me of Eighth Grade, the movie directed by Bo Burnham, which was really good. I mean, to me, it wasn't a revelation the way critics were saying it was, but the way it captures that middle school awkwardness, it is painfully uncomfortable, which is how you know it's realistic. People hate Bo Burnham, though. People hate that man. I don't really know why. I mean, I guess he is very popular at this point after Inside. And the feedback that got as well was a lot. So I understand there is an aspect of like when everyone thinks something is brilliant, how brilliant can it be? A ton of people think something is mind-blowing. I've met a ton of people. I don't trust that crowd to tell me what's good. He also is kind of one of those millennials where he makes stuff where it's like, the world is so bad. Did you guys know politicians and billionaires are mean? Yeah. There are much worse people like that. Something about COVID brought those types of people out of the woodwork. Is it woodwork or woodworks? Out of the woodwork. And you know exactly who I'm talking about. I saw a clip of Sam Morrell. I think that's how you pronounce his name. The comedian, he was doing crowd work and he was asking someone if they're in therapy. And she was like, oh, I'm in so much therapy. He asks why. She's like, ugh, the world. And he's just like, oh, you're one of those people. You're paying hundreds of dollars an hour to ask your therapist what we should do about Ukraine. And we all know those people. And they are never the ones who are going to be the most affected by whatever is going on in the world. It's always someone who's worth $30 million being like, the world is on fire. Okay, get your doorman to extinguish it then. What are you talking about? No one loves the phrase, the world is on fire, more than someone who will never live to see their world burn. Ooh. Wait, why am I a genius? Why was that beautiful and stunning? And it's so true. You, as a rich white person, need to be in therapy because of our political situation? Who the fuck are you? Who are you? You're the last person who needs that. It's not the world's fault that you were so shielded from it that now you're traumatized as an adult because you just found out that there are human rights violations out there. Is that necessary? Who are you to complain about the world being on fire when everybody else is living in this same world? Everybody else, most of whom have it worse than you. And I'm not saying rich people can't have problems, but if you're privileged and getting therapy or whatever it may be for the sole purpose of making you feel better about the world, you're not gonna, but you'll be fine. Okay? Let's talk about George Santos, why don't we? Can we? I want to discuss this because I came across a very, very important Rolling Stone article. So for anyone who isn't caught up, George Santos is a representative in New York for Long Island, I believe. The first, like, gay Republican representative or something. I don't know. He is gay. He is a Republican. I don't really know much about his platform. I haven't even heard tell of what his platform may be. But he's been a hot topic recently, particularly for his past, because what he claims on his resume of sorts is that he came from a middle-class family. He worked his way up to Wall Street. He started a charity. All heavily contested. Okay. People are thinking maybe he grew up with money. He perhaps did not work at the places he claimed to have worked at. Did not necessarily graduate from wherever he claimed to graduate from. Did not maybe start a charity. I'm pretty sure that's where the situation is. I don't know. I don't know exactly what lies he's confirmed to have told. But one of the big ones recently, some people came out and said that he used to do drag. And he was like, no. I would never do something like that. How dare you? And then a picture surfaced of somebody who is definitely him in drag. And he was like, okay, you got me there. Maybe I did dress up in drag once for a festival or whatever it was, but I was never a drag queen. He says he maybe participated in drag. He was never a queen, never royalty. But the latest thing that came out about this man that the Rolling Stone article was about, karaoke. Okay, let's discuss it. He was, I guess there's this karaoke app where people can sing karaoke, like they'll have the instrumentals, and then you can post that, add a little caption, everybody can hear you sing, like, what's a Disney song? Let me show you the way. I don't think that's a Disney song, but doesn't it sound like one? So you can post that, people can like, people can comment, and they found an account thought to have been run by George. There was, by the way, also a Gawker article about this, with this quote, a duet of the Aladdin song Friend Like Me, famously a solo number, so they're not a fan of his creative choice to add another person, features the caption, this song is such fun. Please join me in going a little cray-cray. FYI, you may need 10 cups of coffee to keep up with me on this one. Santos, if this is him, would have been 26 years old at the time. That is disrespectful. But these captions are incredible. The one he left on his cover of Hallelujah reads, come have fun, guys. It's all about having fun. It's all about having fun. And ain't that the truth? And we should bring back Cray Cray. How about that? How's that for an unpopular opinion? Let's bring back Cray Cray. Because we say crazy. Oh, that's crazy. But Cray Cray, it has a bit of a, just a certain ring to it that crazy doesn't have. When you call something cray cray, it implies almost a certain forgiveness of that thing or that person for being crazy. You know, if you're like, oh, that's my friend Rachel, she's crazy. It sounds like maybe you don't like her very much. It sounds like you're really trying to give a warning. She might be dangerous, who knows? But when you go, oh, Rachel, she's cray-cray, then that really comes across as you're accepting Rachel for who she is. And she's cray-cray, and we love that about Rachel. Anyway, can we play? Let's play a little bit of this karaoke. I did screen record a little of this because I was like, what if he figures out his password, as I'm sure he's trying to as we speak, and deletes them. So I picked my favorite one, The Cup Song, originally sung by Anna Kendrick in Pitch Perfect, and I screen recorded it. Let's listen to a little bit of this.
Lots of energy, guys. Let's have fun.
Yes, let's have fun.
Yeah, go.
A little bit of an intro. He skipped a line there. I'm not sure why. And I'm leaving tomorrow. What do you say? When I'm gone. When I'm gone. Wow. You're gonna miss me when I'm gone. You're gonna miss me by my hair. You're gonna miss me everywhere. Oh, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. Brilliant. When I'm gone. People digging up this sort of stuff, I almost feel like they're trying to make us like him. He dressed in drag, he sung on karaoke apps, he lied on his resume. Who among us can't relate to some extent? We all remember, and I didn't realize that this was a universal experience until the internet came out, but we all remember being in middle school and being left home alone and pulling out that YouTube karaoke version of, what's her name, Christina Perry? Jar of Hearts, and belting that out. Who do you think you are? Maybe I should do that after this. Just really let myself have some fun. Let's have some fun. Let's get cray cray. But you know what? This man is, I think, in his early 30s. And this is the new generation. This is what's gonna happen with every politician, everybody with a 9-to-5 job, even every public figure. Like, now that people who are becoming politicians and such were like teenagers or in their 20s on the internet, they are kind of the first generation of adults to experience this, to really be like, okay, I'm running for office and now my vlogs that I made as a teenager are resurfacing. Great. Imagine how it's going to be with like Gen Z and younger. Imagine when your fave Caroline runs for office. What are we going to do then? That's the thing. This is going to happen to so many people that now it's just, we got to be shameless about it. If you're a teen now and in 5 years some recruiter is pulling up your old Musical.ly profile, you'll look them straight in the eyes and you say, what do you want me to do? I liked 5 Seconds of Summer. What's a girl to say? That's what's going to happen. That's what will have to happen. And I honestly can't wait for all of us to be like, yes, I have a horrendous digital footprint. And I would like this HR job. Thank you very much. I also want to talk about, speaking of public figures, Anna Delvey had her birthday party recently. Her 32nd birthday. So if you're listening to this, Anna, happy birthday. But there was a story that allegedly, to get into the party, people had to sign NDAs that included adding their social security number. And that made a little bit of a stir. And everybody was like, oh, who in the world would give Anna Delvey their social security number to just to be at her party? Is this a safe space? I would. If you're listening to this, you probably would too. Let's be real with ourselves. If I was invited to a party hosted by Anna Delvey with her little ankle monitor on, do you really think I'm gonna skip it because I'm afraid to write down a series of digits? I don't think so. Especially the way I live my life, I'm not even reading anything I'm signing. To be honest, well, I read it, but I'm not the most vigilant person. I'm probably not going to ask for clarification, because then I'd have to send an email. Also, I feel like the NDAs were just something that was meant to get out there, that people had to sign those. Because what really is the purpose of, A, having people sign an NDA, just in general, when you're not a company? When you're an individual person and you're having somebody sign an NDA to get into your party, that doesn't hold up in court. You're just kind of doing it for the bit. You're either, doing it as a, I really see the best in people, because most people are probably doing it as an intimidation tactic. For me, I would do it as a bit. But especially this party was being photographed. So I don't think it was a lock up all your phones and never speak of this again kind of moment. She also asked kindly for the attendees to make a donation to a legal services nonprofit. That's nice. That's nice. I think clubs should start doing this. I think when bouncers are trying to limit how many guys that they're allowing in the club, let in the ones who make a charitable donation. I don't think that idea's half bad. The club can do good. And then when you're inside there and maybe a man asks to buy you a drink, you're like, you know what? This man just donated to charity. I'll sit with him for the length of a vodka soda. So Anna Delvey also did that. I wish I was there. Am I upset that I wasn't invited to Anna Delvey's birthday party? A little bit. I have been to parties with some people who were photographed there, so at least I have some sort of connection, even if it's from a distance. But I would love to meet her one day and really get a sense of what she's like in person. The funny thing is, I've definitely met a lot of those people where I have been, like, not people I admire, even though, who's to say I don't admire her, but I've met real characters. I don't want to name names for various reasons, but I've interacted with people in a situation where I was like, oh, I have to meet them for the story. They're just such a notorious figure. I have to know what they're like in real life. It must be this cray-cray situation. And then, you know what? Those kinds of people are usually a little bit boring in person. They are. It's never really what I expect. I have high expectations. And then it's not much of anything. And I think it's because the people who achieve a reputation like that, for better or for worse, but the people who are famous or infamous in some sense, they do stand out sometimes by being mediocre or a little bit dull or whatever it is. Someone like Elizabeth Holmes, I'm sure she's incredibly dull in person, but the way she isn't extraordinarily attractive or charming, that can be who really impresses people. Because they're like, this person must have something special. If they don't want to flaunt, if they don't want to be on their best behavior and just charm and seduce everybody in the room, they must have something going for them. They got nothing to prove. What else? Oh, news. Here's a little something straight from the news, if you can believe. The CEO of TikTok is set to testify before Congress, I believe in March. So who knows what's going to happen there. He is going to discuss the issues of privacy and security, as well as just the app's potential impact on young people. I think especially in the sense that it's designed to be very, very addictive. And I don't know if that can necessarily get it banned, but it's a fair point. Like, it is pretty clear on that app that it's designed to get you hooked. And then they have those videos every once in a while when you're sitting in bed having maybe a sad night or some sort of crisis and you've been watching TikToks for several minutes. They have somebody pop up and go, hey, you've been scrolling for a while. They also are just like in their bed, front camera. That's the fascinating thing about TikTok is there will be full-on ads paid for by huge corporations where it's just someone in their room on their little iPhone. But those videos, they'll be like, I see you've been scrolling for a while. It might be good to, I don't know, light a candle. I don't really remember what they say, but that it seems to be the way that TikTok is planning to cover their ass when they give young people personality disorders. And this has happened before where there was potential for TikTok to be banned. I remember this. I remember it was in August 2020 or like late July because I was moving that day. And everybody I knew from that godforsaken app was getting on live, bursting into tears and being like, I am so glad I had this community. I'm so grateful for each and every one of you. And I wish I wasn't losing this. And I want to appreciate the journey for what it was. And I'm not going to cry because it's over. I'm going to smile because it happened. And I remember seeing that, just being like, Thank God I have to put all my stuff in boxes. So I don't even have the opportunity to participate in that sort of nonsense. And then the next day it was just like, this is not happening. The app's staying up. You can all go back to your little videos. And that was that. So I don't know if it'll be different this time. I'm not a great future predictor myself. But I am curious, not just about what'll happen, but about what would happen, particularly if TikTok went away. Because what the hell is going on with social media recently? Like, what are our other options? There's Instagram, right? It's like half spam, where people will post a meme from 7 years ago and then be like, check out this other account that posts memes from 7 years ago. Or it's just Facebook, where I don't want to even look at most of the stuff on there. I don't care about what you wore to your goddamn baby shower. I don't. Even if I love you, which I probably don't, to be fair. And then Twitter, I don't know what's going on with that. A bunch of people left, but they were mostly just 50-year-old celebrities who weren't really using it in the first place. And there's nowhere really, maybe if YouTube Shorts or Instagram Reels get really huge, that'll be the next frontier. But is that going to happen? I think the strength of TikTok, and also what makes it so addicting for the youth, is that it has just a very, very accurate algorithm. And you just have an infinite list of videos that play automatically and loop over and over that are personally tailored to you. I go on Instagram and I'm like, why are you showing me a video of somebody's bath routine? I know about Lush, I'll have you know. I've been in there, I've experienced the aggressive employees. I don't need to watch you drop one of their products into some water. I don't care for that. Well, we'll see. Last thing, my sort of media of the week. Once again, I haven't been really reading or watching a ton of things, so this is totally coming out of nowhere and not even something I necessarily recommend. Like, it's not the most riveting thing in the world, but I was in one of my, like, Wikipedia spirals where I just go from page to page to page to page until I discover all sorts of things that I never knew existed, and I found out about an old column that used to run in The New Yorker. It was, I forget who it was written by. Her name was like Mauve or something. Mauve, I don't know. But she wrote this column, I think from the 50s to the 80s, going by the name of The Long-Winded Lady. And it's basically just these little pieces where the long-winded lady is out and about in New York City and she observes stuff. And that's it. That's literally it. Nothing really happens. At the end of the day, nothing really happens. It's just a very detailed sort of nugget of people watching. I read one that was just like, my heel broke, so I went to the store. And then I heard a woman who was humming while shopping. I wonder what her story is. And like, that was it. That was it, but I had fun reading it. I would not like go through and read every single one of them, but I had fun in my brief little affair with this column. I love, for the same reason I love reading old etiquette books, I love reading stuff like that that's sort of just a slice of life from old times. Because you can learn as many little factoids about the past that your brain could possibly process. But it's different to read something like that, where it's like, okay, this is every little detail of a woman in 1960 going to the store. That's really fun to me. I guess for the same reason I like watching slice of life TikToks. I just don't know how other people live. I don't know how they did live. I don't even know how I live. People ask about my lifestyle. I'm like, you know what? It's here and there. It's this and that. Sometimes I do an activity. Sometimes I don't. Like, I don't know what to say. Maybe I should keep a little diary like the long-winded lady. If The New Yorker is listening, hello, I can be long-winded. How long have I been speaking? Exactly. So that's that. Thank you for listening. I hope you had fun with me. By the way, I don't ask for much, but on Apple Podcasts, we are almost at 1,000 reviews. So if you'd like to leave a little 5-star review, because I think we're at 4.9, so let's keep it there, but let's get to 1,000. I'd like to accomplish a goal. I'd like to meet a number. Anyway, thank you, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.